Fair warning, this show contains strong language and adult themes from time to time. Sorry, Jerry can't help it.
Sick Boy Wolfgang Productions presents The Offering with Jerry Horror. A deep dive into the history of film and its filmmakers. Mostly horror, always genre.
'80s and '90s horror fans, it is time to rejoice. You've seen his work, you're a fan of his art, and now you can wear artist Mark Schoenbach's sadist art designs. If you're a fan of cult classic horror, you know his work. You've seen it everywhere, from the Halloween franchise to Pool Party Massacre. Whether it's at Slashback Video or Mac and Me, you will recognize his distinct style instantly. Now check out his latest stock, including R.L. Stine and Christopher Pike-inspired merchandise. Visit sadistartdesigns.com and put some respect on your swag. RetroSource Long Island is taking you back. Take a trip back in time with their custom-built store, paying tribute to the best decades of all time, the 80s and the 90s. They have a massive collection of video games to choose from, spanning from Atari 2600 to Nintendo Switch, not to mention a large selection of toys, plushies, art, collectibles, board games, and so much more. They've got a friendly and quirky staff that loves to talk to you all about your favorite movies, cartoons, and TV shows that you grew up with. Check out their funny skits on their Instagram at RetroSourceLI. Do you love E.T., Thundercats, Back to the Future, Masters of the Universe, RoboCop, Street Fighter, Knight Rider, Ninja Turtles, Pokemon, Power Rangers? Yeah, man, RetroSource has got you covered. Take a photo in their Saved by the Bell high school locker display. It's totally mint. Spend hours playing arcade games while getting a sugar rush from vintage candy and soda. It's gnarly, buddy. Located at 1075 Portion Road in Farmingville, New York, RetroSource, Long Island's most radical shopping experience.
Welcome to The Offering with Jerry Horror, the show where we can have a quiet and frank discussion as adults about the things that matter to me, or at least that I think matter to me. Please take a moment to subscribe to our show wherever you get fine podcasts, and hey, stay up to date on future episodes.
Coming up, a studio that desperately needed a summer blockbuster but got a grounded and grimy horror film. Filming on this movie began before the script was even finished. Within its franchise is the most controversial entry among fans. There was even a cartoon spin-off pilot for this movie. What went wrong? If you ask James Cameron, he'll tell you that this picture was a slap in the face. The lead actor begged that their character be killed. The tagline for this film was, "The bitch is back." Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss this.
Ladies and gentlemen, friends beyond the binary, it's me, your host,
Jerry Horror. You know me. Come on. I was just putting on a little voice. That's all me, baby. No performance-enhancing drugs. Yet. Yet. That is the operative word. This is the penultimate episode, which means it is the second to last episode of the season. Do you want more? Let the people know. Let your voice be heard. Tell everyone you know about The Offering. Tell your neighbors. Tell a friend. Tell a cop. Like, go up to a police officer and be like, yo, have you heard The fucking Offering with Jerry Horror? Well, if you're out tonight, I mean, I don't know. People might think you're a rat if you're talking to a cop. We're watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, which was one of my favorite movies of the year. I did not have that on my bingo card. Barbie was one of the other ones. If you told me 5 years ago, these are going to be your two of the best movies you see all year in cinemas, and it's Ninja Turtles and Barbie. Who knew? Didn't even have to go to the movies. Just had to open up the old toy chest, right? So, this is the second to last episode of the third season. I hope that you are enjoying everything that you've heard. Here's some sick plugs. We've done all kinds of movies. Everything from Last Action Hero to Xanadu. Oh, man. It's just great movies, great stories, because that's what it's about. It's about the stories behind the stories. Focus, Jerry. Focus. Bring it in. It's about the stories behind the stories. And that's why you listen to the show. This is why you love the show. Maybe it's my winning personality. I don't know. Speaking of I don't know, we were talking about COVID brain before. Movies that you watched during COVID. And I think my first movie back to the cinemas was Mortal Kombat. That was weird. Everybody sat like a row apart. There was maybe like 10 people tops in the theater. And everybody was just so afraid that we're all sitting like 10 spots. Like there's three rows in front of me, just empty. Three rows. And then like a sparse person. Everybody was still afraid. We didn't know. And then I saw Godzilla vs. Kong. And that was a movie, to say the least. I love those movies. It's just the Americanized kaiju. It's either hit or miss with fans. Purists, it is what it is. I like that big monkey. Can't get enough of that hot big monkey. Who's your favorite actor, Jerry? King Kong. King Kong, love him. Great actor. Fantastic. I've seen every film of his. We saw all these movies during COVID. What movies did you watch? Let me know, because everybody had like these films that they saw or didn't see. Every time I think back, it's like, again, I have the COVID brain. I'm like, oh yeah. And then we did that last year, but it wasn't last year. It was actually 2018. There's just seriously, everybody said it. They said it's just like Thanos with a snap. This time period that doesn't exist. It's like a floating timeline. It's one of those things like if you watch the early episodes of The Simpsons, Homer is growing up in the 1970s. If you watch it now, Homer was a DJ at a local Chuck E. Cheese establishment. The timeline's floating. I don't know how they explain it. It is what it is. But I feel like there definitely is something in the air with COVID brain where you forgot what movies you watched. What movies did you watch when you were in quarantine? There's stuff now I don't even want to go back and watch. Hey, can I give some stray recommends? I saw Spy with Melissa McCarthy and Jason Statham. That was a great movie. What a great movie, right? How did they not make a sequel to that? It's better that they didn't, but what a great film. I saw The Drop with Tom Hardy and James Gandolfini. It's a little crime thriller set in a bar in Brooklyn, all on location. Cool stuff. Little crime thriller. That's it. It's all the doctor ordered. And it worked. You know what? 90 minutes, you're in, you're out. You got some Hardy. One of the last Gandolfini performances. He's great. He's always great. Spy. The Drop. Now on Max. If you're listening to this in the future, it's probably been bought out by like Peacock Max. It's all like Cock Max. I don't know. Maybe that's the brand. Ooh. So folks, it is raining. Woo. It's a nice, cozy fall night where Pete and I are recording. I feel like this should be a show about bird watching and Alec Baldwin should be next to me. That was a Saturday Night Live skit. I've just dated myself. That was like 40 years ago, maybe 30, but still not good. I'm an old man. What can I tell you? I feel like an old man. I wake up. Ooh, Jesus Christ. Cracking and popping. Used to be like Stretch Armstrong. Now I'm like the Thing. Just a bunch of rocks that don't fit together. Imagine like the Thing is in front of you walking the stairs, like creak, crack, crack, like the sounds that his body makes. Jesus Christ. Call David Cronenberg. There's a movie there. There's a movie there. The Thing. Starring Tom Hardy as The Thing. Not associated with John Carpenter's The Thing. Or The Thing from Another World. Or that terrible reboot Quill Legacy sequel that was mostly CGI. Yeah, no one liked that. This has been an incredible season. We did movies that no one thought we could do. We did Planet of the Apes 2001. Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes. Who else would have done that? Lesser podcasts wouldn't have known what to do with that material. Come on. But we did it. We did The Exorcist 2, The Heretic. We did it. I'll say it again. We did Last Action Hero. And Cobra. We did Cobra. People like that. Sick plug. Shout out to the previous episodes. This season was about big swings, big misses, people who took big chances. And we decided to. Doing episodes like Xanadu was to open the door to audiences who might not be familiar with me. And the way that I see the show is it's kind of like my DVD collection, your VHS collection, whatever it is, where it's I've got Uncle Buck. And right next to Uncle Buck is Terminator 2. And right next to Terminator 2 is Steve Martin's Father of the Bride. Why do I have that? I don't know. I bought it. I got it used at Blockbuster. Who knows? But what I'm saying is I'm building a catalog.
That's what we've always been doing here. We're building a catalog of films so that if you watch a movie and you enjoy it and you want to know more about it, hey, we watched The Strangers. We want to know about all the true crimes that inspired The Strangers. I got you. That's what I'm here to do, baby. That's what I do. Season 3, and let me tell you, man, the final episode is going to be... Fans of the show have been waiting for this one. It ties up the first two seasons rather nicely, kind of puts a little bit of a bow on it. Even though there might be more to say afterwards, I can't tell them. I want to tell you, but I can't tell you. Regardless, the season finale is going to be really crazy. Early on, we made a decision. When we were doing promos for this show, the idea was to entice people, to pique their curiosity, to have them look into what film is he talking about. And the reason that we did it was obviously to pull people in. But we need more engagement. We need more engagement from you. So it's a call to action. Tell us. Tell us what you think. Say, Jerry, why the fuck did you do Xanadu? Or you can tell me, Jerry, I didn't know about your show, but I heard the Xanadu episode and it was great. We're just trying to get a gauge of what you like, what you don't like. And honestly, so many of you that I get to talk to via social media, great people, smart people listen to this show. It's not like stupid people listen to this show. People who have taste. I respect our audience and I respect our listeners as people. I think that comes across, but we need more engagement. That's really what this is all about. So don't be afraid to get a little bit vocal. I want to know what you think. And hey, again, get the word out of the offering. You're shopping. You're in the grocery store. Just go up to somebody and say, hey, you listen to podcasts? And they'll say, get the fuck away from me. And then you say, have you heard The Offering with Jerry Hara? And then they're going to call the cops. And then you better start running because those cops are going to arrest you. It's a fucked up world. It really is. So without further ado, one of my favorite films of all time is James Cameron's Aliens. And it is an incredible film. So how do you follow it? Well, stay tuned and you can find out after the break. The success of Aliens is absolutely bonkers. The 1986 film that was James Cameron's follow-up to The Terminator is probably one of the best movies he's ever made. Aliens is just, it's the bee's knees, man. And it's super influential. Outside of the US, you got like Shocking Dark. You got so many Aliens. Alien had a ton of ripoffs. Aliens had maybe even more. So many movies ripped off Aliens. It's still going on today. When James Cameron pitched Aliens, there was a whiteboard, a bunch of executives at Fox, and he wrote Aliens. Well, he wrote Alien, and then he added the S. And they said, oh, plural, Aliens. And then he added a dollar sign where the S was. And the crowd cheered and said, James Cameron, you're going to make Aliens. Little did he know, he would go on to make one of the biggest science fiction horror classics of all time. On a budget of $18.5 million, Aliens made $184 million. The film is seen as one of the most influential science fiction and action movies. There have been countless ripoffs. Come on, we all know this. Everything rips off Aliens. How many times have you watched a movie? You're watching some bullshit outer space movie, and it's just the Space Marines. It's the Colonial Marines. They're doing it again. Even recently with films like The Creator, the obvious influence is there. Aliens changes the game for everyone involved, especially James Cameron. It grants him a blank check with 20th Century Fox. They say, listen, why don't you make us another Aliens? And he says, I got no interest. I don't want to do a sequel. Said, James Cameron, you made us a lot of money. What do you want to make? I want to go make The Abyss. Okay. We'll go to Mexico. And you'll put a bunch of actors through hell on what is most likely to be a future episode, The Abyss. Brandywine, it's Walter Hill's production group, is approached by 20th Century Fox to turn the series into a full-on franchise. They weren't interested. They felt that if they were going to push forward with a new sequel, it would have to be further removed from the first and second movie, doing something wholly unique and original with the property. The producers opted to explore the duplicity of the Weyland-Yutani Corporation and why they were so intent on using those aliens as biological weapons. Now, various concepts were discussed, eventually settling on a two-part story, with the treatment for the third film featuring the underhanded Weyland-Yutani Corporation facing off with a militarily aggressive culture of humans whose rigid sociologist ideology has caused them to separate from Earth's society. And that was the plot synopsis. Does that sound interesting? Maybe. I don't know. Michael Biehn's Corporal Hicks would have been promoted to protagonist in the third film, with Sigourney Weaver's character of Ellen Ripley being reduced to a cameo appearance before returning triumphantly in the fourth installment, which would conclude with an epic battle with alien warriors mass-produced by the expatriated Earthlings. Sounds heavy, man. Weaver liked the Cold War metaphor and agreed to a smaller role, particularly due to a dissatisfaction with Fox, who removed scenes from Aliens crucial to Ripley's backstory. I felt that Ripley was going to become a burden to the story. There are only so many aspects to that character you can do. This was Sigourney Weaver at the time, concerning the future of Ripley. Although 20th Century Fox were skeptical about the idea, they agreed to finance the development of the story. But I asked that Hill and his producing partner Giler attempt to get Ridley Scott as the director of Alien to make Alien 3. They also asked that the two films be shot back-to-back to lessen the production costs. While Scott was interested in returning to the franchise, it didn't work out due to the director's busy schedule. Unfortunately, it all just couldn't come together and Scott lost interest. Enter William Gibson. In September of 1987, Giler and Hill approached cyberpunk author William Gibson to write the script for the third film. Gibson, who had told the producers his writing was influenced by Alien, accepted the task. Fearful of an impending strike by the writers, that's the Writers Guild of America, who just won the strike. Good for them. Brandywine asked Gibson to deliver a screenplay by December. Gibson drew heavily from Giler and Hill's treatment, having a strong interest in the Marxist space empire element. The following year, Finnish director Rennie Harlan, director of the successful Nightmare on Elm Street 4, Dream Master, previous episode, sick plug, when Freddy ruled the world. Harlan wanted to go in different directions from the first two movies, having interest in both visiting the alien homeworld or have the aliens just straight up invading Earth. Gibson mockingly summed up his script as space commies hijacked alien eggs, big problem in mall world. Rennie Harlan wanted to make a big pop culture movie. Would have been more like colonial marines battling aliens at the Starcourt Mall, just like in Stranger Things. Also very heavily influenced by aliens, among Nightmare on Elm Street and many other things. So essentially, Ripley is in a coma. Facehuggers are nested in Bishop's remains, and then Bishop is repaired by the corporation in order to figure out what happens during the events of Aliens. Hicks explores an abandoned space station and discovers Weyland-Yutani are developing an alien army. Now, of course, the space station becomes overrun by aliens because it's an Aliens movie. Hicks must team up with the survivors to destroy the parasites. The film ends with a teaser for the fourth movie, where Bishop suggests to Hicks that humans are united against a common enemy, and they must track the aliens to their source and destroy them. Obviously, the screenplay was very action-oriented, featuring an extended cast, and in some circles, as superior to what we ultimately got. The producers on the whole were unsatisfied with the screenplay. Giler described as perfectly executed, but just wasn't all that interesting, and ended up just being a generic action film with the aliens. So they decided not to talk to any new directors after that pitch. So, strike happens, right? This is in the 80s. Gibson was asked to make rewrites with Harlan, but declined, citing various other commitments and foot-dragging on the producers' parts. And this is the truth of the story. Brandywine was just not interested. They weren't. Now, I have to put this in here because we have to keep track. On July 12, 2018, it was announced that William Gibson's unmade screenplay of Alien 3 would be adapted into a comic series as a part of Alien's 40th anniversary, and the audiobook version of William Gibson's unproduced screenplay of Alien 3 was released and made available
on Audible. And Lance Henriksen narrates it, and it's actually really good. William Gibson's unmade script for Alien 3 is better than the Alien 3 we got. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but there, I said it. I listened to the audiobook. I thought it was really good. So, Gibson's out, Eric Red's in. Following Gibson's departure, Harlan suggested screenwriter Eric Red, writer of the cult horror films The Hitcher and Near Dark. Red worked less than 2 months to deliver his draft in February of 1989, which led him to later describe his Alien 3 work as the one script I completely disowned because it was not my script. It was the rush product of too many story conferences and interference with no time to write and turned out utter crap. So he, even going back as far as 1989, Fox is interfering with this movie, demanding rewrites. It never ends. It's 20th Century Fox. And as we explored with Planet of the Apes, they are a fickle bunch. They are a fickle bunch. And there's a reason that that studio went out of business. Okay. There's a reason it's owned by Disney. It wasn't properly managed for many years. His approach had a completely new set of characters and subplots while introducing new breeds of the alien. Now, this one opens up with a team of special forces, Marines, and they're boarding the ship, the Sulaco, and finding out that all the survivors had fallen victim to the aliens. And then afterwards, the action is moved into a small town U.S. city type of vibe, like a biodome in space type of thing, if that makes sense. It's like a Midwestern town, but it's just a space station in the middle of space. There's an all-out battle in what is supposed to be like middle America in the early 90s. And the townsfolk are facing off against alien warriors. So, as we know, because you already know what's happening. You listen to this show. Brandywine rejects Red script for deviating too much from their story and eventually gave up on developing two sequels simultaneously. So now, writer David Twohy, who wrote The Fugitive and would direct Pitch Black, was next to work on the project, being instructed to start with Gibson's script and expand upon it. Twohy changed the setting of the script to a prison planet, which was being used for illegal experiments on the aliens for a biological warfare division. They always want to use these things as aliens. It's bioweapons. Whenever you watch a science fiction movie or some kind of like a deviation of a horror movie, it's, oh, we've got these monsters. You know, even like Jurassic World, how can we turn them into killers? How can we make them Marines? Can we make the Raptor a Marine? I want to know. Let me know, Chris Pratt. Give me a call. Harlan, you know what? Chris Pratt's not going to call me. He's too busy being mediocre. Harlan felt this approach was too similar to the previous movies and tired of the development hell and walked out on the project, which led Fox to offer Harlan The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, which was the ill-fated Andrew Dice Clay vehicle that kind of didn't work, but I like it. It's definitely a guilty pleasure. Robert Englund is the bad guy. There's some boobs. It's well shot. It's a fun movie. Hopefully that's something I'd like to see on Blu-ray, but Disney owns it now, so good luck with that, kids. You'll be buying bootlegs at the local Monster Mash at your Civic Convention Center. Twohy's script was delivered to Joe Roth, who was the president of Fox at the time. He didn't like the idea of Ripley not being in the movie, saying Sigourney Weaver is the centerpiece of the series, and Ripley was really the only female warrior that we have in our movie mythology. I don't feel comfortable moving forward with a new alien film that wouldn't involve Weaver. Weaver was then called by Joe Roth with a reported $4 million salary plus the share of the box office receipts. And you go, because she deserved that. That's what Schwarzenegger was getting. That's what Stallone was getting. She was an action hero, right? Movie made a lot of money. She's at the height of her powers, too. She's at the height of her powers. She did that movie with Harrison Ford, Working Girl. She was kind of the heavy. It's kind of the bad guy. Melanie Griffith. It was a good movie. I like Working Girl. Couldn't fucking make Working Girl today, huh? Just give me another Ninja Turtles movie. I mean, look, I'm sorry. The Ninja Turtles movie is very good, but still. She requested that the story be suitably tailored to her and be original and non-dependent on guns. Weaver said, "I do not want guns in this film. I'm a mother now." So he duly set about writing Ripley into this screenplay, even though she wasn't originally into it. So let's get this movie moving, because now it's 1990.
Aliens came out in 1986, and we've been trying to get this off the ground for the past 3 years. We get Vincent Ward. Walter Hill had been a fan of Ward's indie films and stage plays. He hounded Ward for nearly 6 months. Ward said he had no interest in making a sequel to a big-budget blockbuster. Ward thought little of the TWOE script and instead worked up another idea involving Ripley's escape pod crash landing on a monastery-like satellite. Having developed this pitch on his flight to Los Angeles, once Ward got with the studio executives, he saw his idea approved by the studio. Ward was hired to direct Alien 3, and writer John Fasano was hired to expand his story into a screenplay. However, once TWOE discovered through a journalist friend that another script was being written concurrently with his, he went after Fox and eventually left the project. Ward envisioned a planet whose interior was both wooden and archaic in design, where reformed monks would take refuge. So the whole planet is like an ecosystem made out of wood. The whole thing, just completely made out of wood. It's all organic, trees. And at first they liked the concept, but then the studio realized how expensive it was going to be. The production designers were like, if we have to build entire sets out of wood, even if we fake it with our trickery, it's still going to cost us beyond anything you want to spend for Alien 3. Largely, this story with the monks would become what Alien 3 would eventually be shaped into. Fox didn't like how the script ended. Eventually, Ripley decides to sacrifice herself to kill the alien. Fox asked for an alternative ending where Ripley survived. But Weaver would only agree to the film if Ripley died. Oh, and no guns. Sigourney Weaver described Ward's overall concept as very original and arresting. Visionary, if you will. Former Times journalist David Hughes included Ward's version of Alien 3 amongst the greatest science fiction movies never made. Now, going back to that wood. It's been said that those production designers and what was planned was absolutely gorgeous. They did start working up models and even began building these sets. There's a prison and it's made more of these biological earthy elements. There were cows. There were actually cows on this thing. It was like a floating and ever-changing puzzle box, like in Hellraiser, but floating through space and made of wood. Ultimately, the concept was divisive amongst production, and ultimately the wood planet would be nixed, and this pissed off Ward to no end. When they told him he couldn't have his wood planet that was floating in space, they said, I think at that moment, Vincent Ward was like, fuck you. You're not believing in my design. You're not believing in what I'm trying to bring to this film. So the producers of Brandywine discussed the logical problems of creating and maintaining a wooden planet in space, while Fox executive John Landau considered Ward's vision to be more on the artsy-fartsy side than on the big commercial side. We need a big summer blockbuster. This is the kind of film that Ridley Scott or James Cameron would do. Ward managed to dissuade the producers of the idea of turning the planet into an ore refinery and the monks into prisoners. But eventually, Fox asked for a meeting with the director, imposing a list of changes be made. Refusing to do so, Ward was fired. The main plot of the finished film still follows Ward's basic structure. So Walter Hill and David Giler had pretty much shot down every screenplay. We're tripping again into the future. It's the beginning of the 90s. So they write their own script because no one can seem to crack it. Hill and Giler did a first draft trying to enhance the story structure on the script. Feeling creatively drained, they hired Larry Ferguson as a script doctor. Ferguson's work was not well received into the production, particularly by Sigourney Weaver, who felt Ferguson made Ripley sound like a pissed off gym teacher. This guy doesn't know how to write for women. That's what she said. Short on time before filming was due to commence, Hill and Giler took control of the screenplay themselves, melding all of the elements from every previous script into one big stew of sorts. Sigourney Weaver also had a clause written into her contract stating that the final drafts should be written by Hill and Giler, believing that they were the only writers, besides James Cameron, to write the character of Ripley effectively. Weaver wasn't happy with what Ward was bringing to the table as a director. Now, we got a bunch of big sets that have been started to be built, the big wooden planet, and we're not doing it, so we're going to build these sets and we're going to tear them down, and everybody just stop what you're doing. So Fox finds this kid. He's 25 years old. He's a Wunderkind music video director. His name's David Fincher. Fincher had made now iconic videos from the likes of George Michael, Madonna, and Billy Idol. He was a sought-after commercial director known for his keen eye and unique style. He was the son of a Life magazine reporter. Fincher produced a local TV news show while he was still in high school. As a 19-year-old, he was working for Industrial Light and Magic, and he ended up shooting some of the second unit stuff on Return of the Jedi. He wanted to make an alien film since he was 14 years old, and this was his big chance. He was a huge fan of the first two, and mainly because Fox thought that they could control him, and that was probably their first mistake.
We'll be right back with more of The Offering with Jerry Horror.
Monster lovers, young and old, living and dead, you can now make it Halloween all year round. The Ghouligans are dying for you to check out their creepy comedy horror show now on their YouTube channel. Have you been ravenous for programs that are geared more towards your sick sensibility? Have you been fiending for horror and comedy so fun that it makes you want to scream? Well, dig no further. Full episodes of the Ghouligans miniseries are available for you to sink your teeth into. And if you don't know about the Ghouligans, it's like the Monkees meets the Munsters meets Pee-wee's Playhouse. These fun party monsters exist purely to bring on the death of your life-sucking, normal, everyday TV show. The Ghouligans follows the adventures of Boris Stein, the monstrous Frankenstein construct, Wolfgang W. Wolfgang, the likable lycanthrope, and Void, king of the slow zombies, joined by a cadre of your favorite cult cretins, including vampires, sea creatures, luchadors, and sexy go-go girls. Check out the full episodes of their mini-series now on the Ghouligans YouTube channel, and have a scary good time.
The term cult film itself refers to the subculture that surrounds underground films and midnight movies. A cafe is usually a small and informal establishment serving various refreshments in an intimate and inviting setting. What do you get when you combine the two? You get the Cult Cafe, located at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington, New York. Every Saturday night at 10 p.m., Cult Cafe brings you the best in cult film and beloved classics, curated with care, especially for a devoted fan base of cinephiles. Cult Cafe is where box office bombs are resurrected, and more obscure, transgressive films, shunned by the mainstream, can find a home beautifully projected on a large silver screen. Past movies screened at the Cult Cafe include David Cronenberg's Videodrome, Frank Henenlotter's Basket Case, John Carpenter's The Thing, Sam Raimi's Evil Dead, Victor Bonacore's Thrust, and Richard Kelly's Donnie Darko. Man, the programming there is on point. For tickets and showtimes, head on over to cinemaartscenter.org to find a listing of films, or add Cult Cafe on Facebook to find a series of upcoming events. There really is nothing like seeing an old favorite in a theater full of your fellow movie fans. Hey, maybe I'll even see you there. Cinema will never die at the Cult Cafe.
Listeners and fans of The Offering can get their hands on their very own The Offering with Jerry Horror merch, now only at Tee Public. Find your own fresh The Offering with Jerry Horror high-quality merchandise, including t-shirts, hoodies, tank tops, long sleeves, stickers, and mugs. Just like the show, we've got gear that's mostly horror, always genre. The Offering with Jerry Horror Tee Public store has everything you need to represent your favorite podcast. Folks, head on over to teepublic.com right now and pick up your very own Offering Tee today. You're listening to The Offering with Jerry Horror. Got a question or a story you want to share with me? It might be featured in a future episode. Email me at jerryhorror@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter @jerryhorror. I'm also on Instagram. You can find me there @jerryhorror. Rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review in an upcoming episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to The Offering. Now back to the show.
Here, in a world where the sun burns cold, and the wind blows colder. A visitor has come, but not by herself.
It started.
Come on!
The suspense is back.
And we have no weapons of any kind?
The fear is back.
No! Don't look back, dude! Run as fast as you can!
And most of all, the bitch is back. Alien 3.
Fincher did further work on the screenplay with author Rex Pickett, and despite Pickett being fired, Hill and Giler writing the final draft of the screenplay, he revised most of the work done by the previous authors. Fincher desperately wanted Gary Oldman to star in the film, but the pair couldn't work it out. Desperately tried. The story goes that Gary Oldman was going to be the lead opposite Sigourney Weaver in this film. He didn't like the script. And then Fincher rewrote it a bit, gave it to Oldman, and then Oldman said, "They're not paying me enough money." So, filming begins without Gary Oldman. And the filming began on January 14th, 1991, at Pinewood Studios in England, without a finished script. Remember what I tell you about these movies. It doesn't matter. They're the big swings. We're taking a lot of chances, and we're not finishing our screenplays. Finish your screenplay and shoot what's on the page. A little advice from a guy who's never made a movie. $7 million had been spent on sets already that were never used, thanks to the ever-changing script, before filming had even started. All of the sets had to be destroyed a week after filming had begun. Immediately, the studio was breathing down Fincher's neck, and the first day was terrible. In fact, it was awful. Fincher stayed up all night crying. He then called his agent in a last move of desperation and said, "Can I leave this film? Can I just walk?" His agent told him that your first foray into big studio filmmaking will be done. You will kill your career if you walk off of this film. It would be career suicide. Fincher gets a good night's sleep and he sucks it up. Day two begins, and so did the most hellish experience that Fincher would ever go through. He realized that the shooting script was only 45 pages long, and that the rest was being written on the fly, every day, changing, hour to hour. Fincher wanted a few new set pieces and was denied the money. "Absolutely not," said Fox. This would continue throughout the entire shoot. Original cinematographer Jordan Cronenweth worked only for 2 weeks on the film before he started developing Parkinson's disease and was forced out of the film by a line producer who had lost his father to the disease several years prior. Fox knew that the demanding schedule would likely take a fatal toll on Cronenweth's health, and it wasn't how he wanted to spend his last few months of life on Earth, making this disastrous Alien 3 movie. So we're off to a good start. So we don't have a cinematographer. He was replaced by Alex Thompson. He's an old pro. He shot everything. A lot of stuff, especially in England. Labyrinth, a lot of the Jim Henson stuff. He shot Excalibur. And Michael Mann's disastrous first film, The Keep. Michael Mann disowns that film. He hates it. I think it's pretty good. Fincher wanted the alien to be more like a puma or a beast, as opposed to the upright humanoid posture of its previous films. So they got the designer of the original Alien, H.R. Giger. He was contacted to generate new sketch ideas. His revisions included longer, thinner legs, the removal of pipes around the spine, and an idea for a sharp alien tongue in place of the secondary jaws. Working from his studio in Zurich, Giger produced these new sketches, all of which 95% got thrown out. The only one of Giger's designs that wound up in the final project was a Bambi burster. It's an alien that had long legs and walked on all fours. Now, originally, they had wanted to get Stan Winston back, but they couldn't. He was busy doing other things, so they had to bring in an entirely new effects team. Their brilliant idea? Use a puppet that would digitally erase or obscure the puppeteers. A lot of this was new technology. It hadn't been done before. The puppet would be all in-camera stuff, but a lot of it didn't work, and it ended up looking hokey. You could tell that the alien
was a puppet. It looked like a Muppet, I'm going to be honest. If you watch the behind-the-scenes stuff on the disc, it doesn't look good. They would shoot a new Rod puppet on a blue screen and then digitally composite the Beast via very new and unstable digital technology. There would be a prosthetic head that would be used for close-ups, and even at one point, they put an alien costume on a dog. This was Fincher's request. He felt that it would make it more real and tangible than the puppet. Unfortunately, the whole dog and the costume thing didn't work. It was actually kind of a disaster, mainly because the dog, Whippet, was so loving that any time he tried to chase someone as the alien, he would end up being too good a boy and giving them kisses. So they've got this big evil monster that's being played by a lovable dog. It's not working. Producer Pete, it's not working. So they put one of the special effects artists into a costume for some of the shots, which was probably a better idea. The only things that really work in the film are the close-up stuff with the newly created mechanical alien. They use that for the whole sequence in the trailer, when the alien is right up against Ripley's face. That's the mechanical alien that they created. So many different types of technology were implemented, and at one point they even considered stop motion for the alien. That wasn't going to work, so they hired a new effects team and tried to rework the puppet stuff, which they tried to make happen to a degree. The technology just wasn't there. The movie is, you know, you've seen it, or you maybe, I don't know what you're doing. Did you watch this movie? Did you watch Alien 3? If you've seen, or should I say spoiler alert, movie that came out 30 years ago, we should all be fucking concerned and precious that you haven't seen it. I'm sorry. Ooh, I digress. They insert Bishop into this, but he's a fucking puppet. He's like a slimy puppet. And look, there's a lot of things that don't work. Can we start getting into them? Can I start talking? I'm allowed to. So did I mention the little girl that we all came to know and love in the second film, Newt, would be killed along with Corporal Hicks off screen in the first 5 minutes of the movie? This fatal decision would echo throughout the entire franchise, and it really upset people. It really upset me because I was at the right age. I was probably like 14, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. We're going to see Hicks and Newt, and they're going to go on all these adventures, and you just fucking killed them? Like, everybody loved these characters, and you just murked them without even saying anything. And I'm going to tell you, that narrative choice is why I hate this movie. I can never forgive this movie. As much as I love David Fincher as a director, that story choice is poor. You just don't do that. You don't. It doesn't work. People still talk about it. A lot of nerd circles, a lot of people, you know, in those Kevin Smith smelly nerd circles like me. You know, they talk about it. Alien 3 is not how you continue a franchise. Michael Biehn stated in an interview that he was deeply hurt that he wasn't asked to return as General Dwayne Hicks, his character from Aliens, 1986. Spoiler alert. But even more so that the film opened with Hicks immediately being killed off after escaping with the other survivors. Biehn went to an opening week show of the film and had to walk out after he saw what they had done to Newt and Hicks. He was really upset about it. He walked out of the theater. He was like crying. He basically also realized that any hopes of these characters returning had been destroyed. And it's a good thing that Biehn didn't see the original plan for Hicks. One draft of the shooting script included a scene where a chestburster comes out of Michael Biehn's character during the hypersleep. That would have been the first 3 minutes of the movie, which starts the electrical fire. It initiates the ejection procedure. And this was all later abandoned in favor of having the EEV crash and sink. Carrie Henn, who played Newt, was actually fine with them killing her off. She's been quoted. She says, life goes on after Aliens. It's a good way to look at it. Slowly but surely, the production of Alien 3 went completely off the rails. Scripts being rewritten daily, and no one is asking Fincher what he thinks. They're just rewriting it and then handing him the sheets. From day to day, hour to hour, he had no idea what he would be shooting. It was almost impossible to get anything set up or accomplished. This was his first big studio feature, and the pressure was mounting. The then 26-year-old director, he could barely sleep. He was losing his hair and having dreadful panic attacks. Worse yet, he hadn't had a hell of an appetite, so he was weak. He was frail. He got sick. I mean, he was literally making himself sick. So meanwhile, Fox doesn't give a shit. They're planning video games, cartoons, and even a toy line with Kenner. The problem? All of it was based on Aliens. None of the suits knew or cared as to what this new film was about. At one point, they even released a teaser trailer, not knowing or even caring what was going on with the production. The teaser trailer is great. Go watch it. The teaser alludes to a large battle that will play out on Earth. And I was a dumb little kid, and I saw that trailer, and I'm like, oh my God, the aliens are going to invade Earth, and I'm going to be fat with my popcorn. It's going to be good. And that's not what happened. That's not what we got. So day to day, Fincher is verbally assaulted by executives and producers. They felt they could just get away with it because he was young and a first-time director. No one really knows the whole truth of the matter, let's be honest. What we do know is that whatever abuse Fincher endured, he has cared not to go on record or speak about it until this day. There is an anger and hatred that this film projects. It gives off a strong vibe of distrust for the corporation. That's Fincher in real time working out his issues with the studio as it's being made. The film is full of frustration. It's full of passion, all at once, intermingling, vacillating between the two. These elements are too combustible, and they can be seen now in the film as it is. There are a few digital elements toward the end of the film. Most of that was made photochemically and handcrafted by artists, which would be one of the last photochemically completely produced films by 20th Century Fox in 91. Think of this in stark contrast to watch what Alien Resurrection would be in just a few years later with digital filmmaking. At one point, David Fincher was denied permission by the film's producers to shoot a crucial scene in the infirmary between Ripley and the alien, where the latter menacingly closes in on Ripley. Against orders, Fincher grabbed Sigourney Weaver, a camera, and shot the scene anyway with the mechanical alien. The scene not only appears in the final cut, but also featured prominently in all of the marketing, trailers, and it's pretty much the movie's iconic shot. And he had to do it against Fox's permission, off on a little soundstage with just a camera, him, the mechanical alien, Sigourney Weaver. But hey, do what we say, Fincher. You do what we say. Cute little fact, while off set, Sigourney Weaver had to wear a wig because she had shaved her head for this film. Her then 2-year-old daughter, Charlotte, didn't like to see her mother bald. In fact, it made her cry. So every time that Sigourney Weaver had to go back to her daughter or come home, the wig was going on. The budget was spiraling. Did I mention this? The budget was out of control. This was originally a $40 million film, and reports say that it ballooned closer up to $75 million. And producers began to rush Fincher in order to cut costs. At one point, they didn't even care. They just said, finish it up and let's call it a day. Fincher would film a scene, and the studio would see the dailies. They would then tell him to reshoot things that he didn't like, and this was becoming a daily occurrence. The crew was working 18 hours a day at a minimum of 6 days a week. They were burning everyone out on the production. Fincher was able to put together a rough cut of the film. That rough cut was 3 hours long, and Fox was pissed once again. The first cut was later screened to test audiences. People were horrified. They didn't even understand the film. Then after 3 months of retooling, rewriting, editing, the production would restart again, with numerous reshoots mandated by Fox. Now, originally, this film had a lot of horrific, ultra-gory violence. It even had a sex scene that was incredibly graphic between Sigourney Weaver and Charles Dance's character. Then once the MPAA got a hold of the film, they threatened Fox with an NC-17. They needed to cut the sex scene and the gore, both of which were cut out of the final film. Word began to leak around Hollywood that Alien 3 was a disaster. Film magazines, journalists were explicitly told by Fox that if anything is written, anything, that they would sue them. It would be libel. It would forbid them access to future Fox films. The cast, the crew, and Fincher were completely burnt out at this point. I mean, what more could be done to save this film? The cast, the crew, and the writers all came to Fincher's side. They believed in the director. They believed in him. They came to really admire him and adore him. Sigourney Weaver herself went to bat many times to fight for Fincher's vision. And on one of the final days of reshoots, the hellish reshoots that had gone on for 3.5 months, Ridley Scott came for a visit. He walked in with his silk suit and one of his big Cuban cigars, looking fabulous. Tan, if you will, right off the beach. Ridley asked how it was going, and I said, really bad. And he said, it never goes well. This is not the way to make movies. Make sure you make a little film where you have some control whilst they're beating you up. That's what he told David Fincher. Everyone believed in Fincher. Ridley Scott, the producers, except for Fox. Fox hated David Fincher for whatever reason. Fincher swore to himself that he would never begin filming a movie without a finished script. It would actually never happen again in his career. I should have walked. Fuck my agent. After seeing that first cut of Alien 3, Fox made another decision. Kill the cartoon. Operation Aliens was a multimedia brand created by Kenner to promote merchandise based on the 1986 film Aliens. They were configuring elements derived from the film to be more child-friendly and in order to better suit the targeted demographic. In addition, the toy line, it included many other miscellaneous merchandise, jigsaw puzzles, plaster molding sets, board games, toy cases, watches, and various other collectibles. Kenner produced three animated commercials that would have been used to promote the Aliens toy line, depicting the Colonial Marines fighting against the aliens in a battle of control for an unnamed space station. These essentially served as a basis for proof of concept for a television show, which at one point was about to be picked up for 24 episodes. Packed in with the toys, the Aliens mini-comics produced by Dark Horse as a tie-in to Kenner's Operation Aliens toy line. The comics consisted of 13 issues that you had to get when you bought a figure. Issues 1 to 12 featuring Ripley and the Space Marines combating against various aliens terrorizing different worlds, while the 13th and final issue is an Aliens vs. Predator crossover. Kenner had also acquired the Predator property and were using Aliens as a soft launch to that particular line of action figures. Fox had made a decision. Alien shouldn't be a children's property. And once this new film is seen by people, it won't work. Kill the cartoon. Due to the deal made with Kenner Products, they were allowed to start making and producing toys, which came out as early as the summer of 1992. They had bought the license and nothing was going to stop them from making the action figure line. Alien 3 had no less than 7 different games based around the film. Now, of course, the games had guns, which the movie wouldn't. I own the Sega Genesis version, and I gotta tell you, oof. There were versions of Alien 3, the video game, produced for, but not limited to, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, Sega CD, Game Gear, Game Boy, the OG NES, Mac, PC, and even a rare Operation Aliens Tiger Electronics handheld game. So this is what Fox is doing. They're selling the rights to Aliens as a property to sell toys, and obviously video games. I got that Genesis version of the game for my 13th birthday, and I gotta tell you, it was underwhelming to say the least. Let's put it that way. Operation Aliens was officially canceled. The Kenner Aliens and Predator line was very successful. It actually lasted from 1992 to 1998. The toy line would even return quite a few times, thanks to NECA Toys. Fincher begged Fox for another 40 days of reshoots, so they gave him 8. One exec also told him to put more jump scares in the movie, because my kid saw it and he thought it was some pussy shit. You've got 8 days. Make it scary, Fincher. Oh, it was just hellish. Alien 3 was most certainly the worst thing that has ever happened to me. David Fincher. On the 8th day of reshoots, Fox took the film from Fincher and thanked him for his involvement. They explained to him that the footage would be given to an editor that would know what to do with it. Then the cherry on top. Look, you could have somebody piss up against the wall for 2 hours, call it Alien 3, and it would still do $30 million worth of business. That's exactly what an executive said to Fincher. Fincher was completely locked out of the edit. And at that point, he had disowned the project completely. It was time to let it go. The nightmare that was the production of Alien 3 was finally over, with Fincher unsure if he would ever make a Hollywood film again. Fox cut the movie to ribbons and brought in a final cut of the movie at 114 minutes. The Fincher cut was closer to 3 hours. Entire characters, subplots, and creatures were completely cut out of the film, with some of it making very little sense. Suffice to say, Fincher pretty much went on a sabbatical after this film. He took a long break. He took a long holiday, and he needed it because it had been so stressful he felt that it took a year of his life away. Kind of like what COVID brain did to us. Alien 3 was David Fincher's COVID-19. All right, that's kind of ridiculous, but let's talk about the release. Originally, Alien 3 was supposed to come out as a big summer blockbuster in 1991. And all that nonsense of the production had moved that timeline forward. How forward? The film would be released in May of 1992. The film debuted at number 2 at the box office behind Lethal Weapon 3 with a Memorial Day weekend gross of $23.1 million. So what were the other top movies at the box office in May of 1992? How about the big winner, Lethal Weapon 3? Lethal Weapon 3 is crazy because Warner Brothers didn't have a big summer movie and they basically just like threw a bunch of duct tape, shit and bubblegum, got Richard Donner, and most of Lethal Weapon 3 was completely improvised. It's insane. That might... Lethal Weapon 3, coming soon to the offering. Basic Instinct, Far and Away, Encino Man, Beethoven, White Men Can't Jump, The Player, Deep Cover, Sleepwalkers, and a holdover from earlier that year, Wayne's World. The movie was considered a flop with a $55 million take in the U.S. It ended up making $159 million worldwide on a budget of $75. Fox allegedly spent $30 million on the marketing alone, which most of those costs were offset by all the video game adaptations. Fans hated the film. So did most critics. The word of mouth spread quickly. Both Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert gave the film 2 thumbs down. The average Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes score sits at a 5.10 and a 48% rotten. Now, the caveat? The silver lining? In Japan, the film was wildly successful, and Japanese audiences consider it to be a classic within the science fiction horror genre of the 90s. So the rebirth. What is the rebirth? Alien 3 would be released on VHS and Laserdisc initially by Christmas of 1992. In 1999, it was released on video. The Assembly Cut, 2003. When Fox wanted to assemble a director's cut of Alien 3 for a home video release, Fincher refused to participate. Instead, the extended cut called the Assembly Cut was created based on using his editing room notes and released in 2003. It was a part of the Alien Quadrilogy box set. Can we also just say for the record, Fox invented the quadrilogy thing. There is no such word as quadrilogy. It doesn't exist. People of a certain age that grew up in the time that we did, the only reason they know this word is because of this box set. So thank you, Fox. I guess. This version of the film runs 144 minutes and includes 30 minutes of extended, alternate, and previously deleted scenes. It is not a director's cut. It also has all of the alternative key plot elements, characters. One example of the plot differences is that in the theatrical version, the alien bursts out of a dog, while in the assembly cut, the alien bursts out of a dead ox. Another example is that in the theatrical version, Ripley and the inmates fall trapped to the alien in the toxic waste room, while in the assembly cut, they succeed and beat the alien. However, Golic, a crazed prisoner who becomes fascinated with the alien, kills the prisoner standing guard and lets the alien loose at the expense of his life. This fills in the plot hole that was Golic's fate. In addition to Golic, a character that had been pulled out of the film, more of the film's minor characters' fates are revealed, filling even more plot holes. I do feel, and again, this is not Fincher's cut of the film, this is what the studio had put together, hence the assembly cut. This is a terrible thing to do to a director, especially one that is still alive, to take his project and kind of Frankenstein it to put something out on home video. I will say for the record, I am an assembly cut apologist. I think it's superior to what we got as far as Fincher's final cut. But then again, it's not. The film was taken away from him, so it is what it is. Personally, I'd like to see a final cut by David Fincher, just like Ridley Scott did with Blade Runner, but it's never going to happen. Is Alien 3 a slasher movie? Yeah, that's basically what it is. Alien 3 is an effective slasher film that was made up as they went along. Plain and simple. Watch it again. It's a slasher movie. It's just people alone in dark hallways. It's a grim and gritty movie. It's at that point in the early 90s when everything had to be tough, grounded, gritty, darker, so that we can realize this new and exciting vision that was actually ultimately just depressing. Again, I'm just not a fan of Alien 3. I rewatched it. I watched the assembly cut. I think it's better. I watched his cut. I don't know. It's just a depressing movie. It does nothing for me. And I was hoping that doing this episode, doing this rewatch, that I would gain some kind of new insight or appreciation for the film. And I have to say, this episode is where I leave you, Alien 3, because I couldn't make heads or tails of it. And it's the first film that we've done this entire season that I actually just do not like. I out and out do not like this film. Here's something that I heard that makes the most sense from our good friend, Roger Ebert. Alien 3 is one of the best looking bad movies I have ever seen. It is a triumph of art direction and a disaster of screenwriting, and the eyes appreciate it more than the mind. Watching it in the moment, we are absorbed. After it's over, we are disappointed. Because what actually happens in the movie is so less interesting than where it happens and how it looks while it's happening. Alien 3 shows promise for a young David Fincher, but caves in on its own premise. In 2009, Fincher finally spoke publicly about the film, saying, "I disown this film. No one hates it more than me. To this day, no one will ever hate it more than me." Fincher was down and out. He did not know where his next paycheck was coming from. But in 1995, he went on to make Seven for Warner Brothers. The film cost $30 million, and it made over $350 million, and it's considered to be one of the most important and influential films of the 90s, and this time David Fincher had final cut and a completed screenplay. Seven is easily one of the most ripped off, whether it's the aesthetic, the style, the storytelling. Seven just gets ripped off for the rest of the 90s, let's be honest. And eventually, Fincher didn't burn his bridges with Fox. Even after all the bullshit that 20th Century Fox put Fincher through, they brought him back with open arms, final cut, final screenplay approval, and he made Fight Club. And it worked out. For the most part, Fight Club worked out. I will say this, though. Fincher had to go through Alien 3 to make 7 because he was in a very dark place, and it is so reflected in that film. So it's kind of one of these things where you go through a lot of bad stuff in life. You say, "God, why did this happen to me?" There's a reason. You're going to go through it. You're going to get through it. And then in the end, you get to make 7. And then you get to go back to the people who fucked you on Alien 3. You get a big paycheck, all the creative control you could ask for, and that's worth its weight in gold. You know what I'm saying? That's what it's all about. Coming out on the under end of a disaster and making the best possible situation that you can make out of it. Producer Pete and I were just talking about this. He goes back to Fox. He makes Zodiac with them, Social Network. He does all these films with Fox, and they end up making money. Fight Club was kind of a bomb at the time, but I'm going to be honest, it's gone on to become a cult classic, but the world in 1999 was not ready for Fight Club. I think it's one of the most important films of that year, along with Episode One, The Phantom Menace, as well as The Matrix. It's all kind of like these weird things that are happening, the confluence of events that was in the air at the time. Well, that certainly was an episode. Now, let's get to something that people call around here Unhinged Reviews. This is by Donald Musgrave Jr. 5 out of 5 stars. Verified purchase on Best Buy. Title: Great Goop Fest. Wanted the kids to watch a good scary movie, and this did it. Wanted an older movie for them, because a lot of this newer stuff kind of sucks. LOL. I don't care what anyone says. Alien 3 rules. Now, you know what? I'm not even going to hate on it, Donald Musgrave Jr. Can I also state for the... I feel like I'm on trial here. Can I state for the witnesses, jury? Can I please put in the testimony? This was not a purchase from like 1997. This is a verified purchase from June 9th, 2023. What's happening? How, like, your kids were like, "Oh, Dad, we want a really scary movie." And Alien 3? That's what you got? Who is this guy? Should we call Child Protective Services? Like, what is he feeding these kids? This is your go-to scary movie? Fuck out of here. Like, you don't know, like, you've never seen Poltergeist? Like, show them Poltergeist. They'll love it. It's great. They removed the headstones. You didn't move the bodies. You moved the headstones, but you didn't move the bodies. One of the greatest line deliveries from Craig T. Nelson at the end of Poltergeist.
Woo! That's what I call an episode. Woo-hoo! A lot of times you people come here and you say to me, Jerry, what was the takeaway? What's the lesson? There is no lesson. The Alien 3 sucks. It's a terrible movie. And you know what? If you're still listening to this and you got this far, you deserve a fucking Medal of Honor because it's not a good movie. It's not. Fincher fucking hates it. The guy who made it hates it. And he doesn't hate it in a way like, oh, well, I look ugly. You guys don't think I'm pretty. No, David Fincher. You're beautiful, but this movie is shit. Absolute dog shit. You can defend it, whatever. Hey, look, when a fucking audiobook comes out that's better than the movie 25 years later, you know there's a problem. I'm putting over the audiobook. The William Gibson script with Lance Henriksen reading it, that's the takeaway. Go listen to that. Producer Pete and I, we were talking about it before too. Neil Blomkamp, thank you, Producer Pete. This guy, and Gran Turismo is good. I'm telling you, folks, it's a solid 7 out of 10. It's kind of like The Karate Kid with cars. I dug it. I liked it. Definite recommend. Alien 3, not so much. Blomkamp was going to do, they were going to bring back Newt. They were going to bring back Hicks and Ripley. And it was going to be a proper continuation about the Colonial Marines from Aliens. And what ends up happening is it just didn't come together. And they pulled the funding, and I don't know what happened. It was the same thing Blomkamp tried to do RoboCop. They had a script that was like The Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood film, and they were going to do it with RoboCop. And the script was pretty good. The treatment, listen to this, the treatment for the RoboCop movie was great. RoboCop outlives everybody. He basically is like, it's 100 years in the future. And now it's like this war between robots and people. And he's like kind of the Jesus Christ savior. He's the mediator between the robots and man. And it sounded really good. And it was set like in the year 3000 in like, old Detroit. And I'm telling you, man, that would have been pretty good. But you know what wasn't pretty good? Alien 3. So bad. I hate this fucking movie. Yo, seriously. If I ever see you out in public and you bring up Alien 3, them's just fighting words. I got some rough language for you, I'll tell you that. I tried. I watch all the documentaries. I rewatch these films. I try to go in, half glass empty type of thing so I can fill my cup. And goddamn, what a shit sandwich. And here's the thing. I love Fincher. I do Fincher fucking rewatches. I rewatch his films. I think Zodiac is like one of his most brilliant films. I love it. Panic Room? Come on. Panic Room's a banger. And it's not available anywhere. Yeah, it's one of these like weird things. Like you can find it on streaming, but there's no like physical media copy. There's people selling bootleg Blu-rays of Panic Room. And why is that? Because 20th Century Fox, which got bought by Disney, they're not putting out physical media. James Cameron was on a press tour. He's been doing screenings. He just screened Aliens, which there's a whole new 4K remaster, Abyss 4K remaster, and True Lies 4K remaster. But Disney, where are they? Okay, it's very nice that you scooted out old James Cameron and you get to do this James Cameron collection, but they haven't come out yet. And I got news for you. We're recording this in October. Christmas is right around the corner. Where's my James Cameron 3-pack from 20th Century Fox, aka Disney? Give me the movies that built my fucking childhood. Come on, man. Wow, I'm getting hostile. I think I need to sit down and have a drink. Speaking of which, I'm at Jerry Hara everywhere. Thank you so much. This is the second to last episode of the season. How did we get here? I can't believe it. It went by in the blink of an eye. Ooh, I really need to lay down. Anyway, I'm Jerry Hara. This has been The Offering. Mostly Hara, always genre. You've been listening to The Offering with Jerry Hara. I'm very sorry. Produced by Pete Bune. If you have a question or a story you want to share with me, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me at jerryhara@gmail.com or hit us up at Twitter @jerryhara or on Instagram @jerryhara. You get in the picture? Subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are provided for you and your family. I want you to enjoy. Just join us next time for another offer.
This has been a Sick Boy Wolfgang production. Thank you for listening.